Just as unrest in the city of Baltimore starts to die down, clergymen here in Jacksonville are sounding the alarm about violence on our streets. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the best way to keep the peace in Duval County. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and First Coast Connect is always live at 9, and now make sure to catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, a leader in this city's faith community speaks out about the recent rash of violent crime in Jacksonville and potential solutions. You can get on the line right now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's travel expert Judy Wells, plus The Spectator with all this weekend's events, all of that ahead. But first this morning, a coalition of clergy groups in Jacksonville is sounding the alarm about violent crime on the streets. This just as the city of Baltimore is cleaning up this morning after riots that erupted after an African-American man died in police custody, his spine nearly severed. Faith leaders here have expressed concern that the same type of unrest is just under the surface. It can happen in any city, frankly. And everything from a curfew to instituting a temporary state of emergency has been proposed, among many other ideas. Now, not all of the ministers speaking out this week agree on what needs to be done. This morning, we are welcoming one prominent local voice from the faith community. Pastor Mark Griffin of the AME Ministers Alliance is here now in studio. Pastor Griffin, as always, a pleasure, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm glad to be with you and your listeners.
And when it comes to the issue of crime in Jacksonville, we want to know, what are your thoughts about calls for a curfew, even a state of emergency? What are your concerns about public safety? What solutions do you want to see proposed? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or just weigh in on our Facebook page. And so this coalition of clergymen has spoken out several times in the last week, Pastor Griffin, saying, the time to point fingers is over. The time to come together is here. You've called for a curfew, among other things. What prompted your call for a curfew in the city of Jacksonville?
Well, actually, it was another group of ministers that called for the curfew. And but what that conversation did for me and for many in the AME Ministers Alliance, it caused us to realize that we needed to raise our voice, because when we start talking about curfews or other strategies, the interesting thing about Jacksonville is that we have been here before. And so instead of proposing new solutions, all we need to do is go back to the year 2006, which was, in my opinion and many people's opinion, was the absolute worst time in Jacksonville when it came to crime and violence. And we came up with a strategy that worked. I think from 2007 through 2011, we saw the murder rate here in the city decline each and every year. And I think as clergy and as elected officials and just as a general populace, we got to the point where we thought we had solved the challenges, and we started taking back some of the things that we put in place. And so my suggestion is, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just go back to do what we know in Jacksonville worked for us. What worked for us may not work for Baltimore or Ferguson, but here in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. we have no doubt about what worked then, and I believe it'll work now.
Let's talk about that. The strategic plan with 7 points that members of the faith community have put forth for consideration. What are some of the strategies that you believe can be successful?
Well, first of all, let me just say that our 7-point plan is not anything that's really amazingly difficult. We didn't come up with this. We took this plan primarily from the 2006 JCCI murder study, which I was a part of. And so from the recommendations, the 13 recommendations from that study, we came up with our 7-point plan, which includes having neighborhood walks where we come into these challenged neighborhoods to make sure the neighbors understand that as clergy and as elected officials and as police officers, that we're here and that we want to share with them and helping them come up with their solutions. Secondly, direct engagement. I think it's one thing to talk to a group of young black males, but it's another thing to have one-on-one mentoring relationships with them. Thirdly, collaborative efforts where we work with the JSO, the mayor's office, the city council, other nonprofits to come up with ways to solve these issues. Fourth, we would go back into these communities and have community fairs where we would have bounce houses and different activities for the young people, again, to allow them to connect with police officers. There's a tremendous need to build trust. What we're seeing around the country it evolved from the fact that many people have lost respect for law enforcement, and in some cases, law enforcement has lost respect for the people. So we've got to bring those communities together. Fifthly, what we also did before and we're going to do again is our clergy group sponsored a series of public service announcements where we talked to our community to let them know that they need to stay away from violence. Young people need to stay in school, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Six, we're going to create safe zones where we're inviting not only our churches within our alliance, but other churches who are willing to offer their houses of worship as places where police officers can do shift change, they can do administrative work, the community can come in, get information, and just develop that particular place as a safe zone within a particular community. And then seventh, have a series of community forums where we're not meeting downtown, but we're going into these affected neighborhoods so that the people will have a voice and they would have an opportunity to share their solutions as well. So that is our seven-point plan. But again, it's based on the JCCI murder study, which I also would like to mention was very similar to the Jacksonville journey
that
we came up with as well.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment for Pastor Mark Griffin of the AME Ministers Alliance. After 32 shootings and 7 deaths so far this month in Jacksonville, what are your concerns and thoughts about how to bring down the violent crime rate? 549-2937. And I misspoke. It was the Reverend Kenneth Adkins who called for the temporary state of emergency and a 9 p.m. curfew. Not everyone's on the same page about that, though.
And I think we cannot get caught up in the rhetoric of curfew or no curfew, because what happens is we take our attention off the real issue. And I don't think the curfew will be the answer or cure-all. Whether we had a curfew or not, there are other things that have to be put in place in order for this to be successful in, once again, reducing our crime and murder rate.
And it's controversial in the city of Baltimore as well, where unrest in that city prompted calls for a temporary curfew. When you look at the news coverage coming out of that city, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, when I watch the news at night, and my heart is broken because it does not have to be that way. And I think one thing that we can all agree on is that we all want to live in a safe environment. And so having a city on lockdown and just seeing all the hurt and all the destruction, it just gives me even more motivation as a leader here in this community to do whatever I can as one person to make sure that that does not happen here.
And you referenced a few times the JCCI study on this issue. That's almost 10 years ago. It's frustrating, I think, for many to see that city officials know what works, and yet we see every so often we keep coming back again and again in Duval County to these issues.
One of the greatest assets we have, and we have many assets here in Jacksonville, but the JCCI is an incredible organization. I had the privilege some years back to serve on their board. As a city, we had gotten ourselves into a situation where we tend to study everything, and then we would not implement that which we had studied. And the JCCI study, which I recently pulled up online, and any your listeners can go onto their website and pull it up. And even though it's dated summer of 2006, it is just as relevant now as it was then. And so, again, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We know what worked. We came back in 07 with the Jacksonville Journey, which was not just a program that funded activities. It was a second study. If you would overlay the JCCI study with the Jacksonville Journey study results, you will find that they were very, very similar. Now, personally, I did not think we need to go through that second iteration, but I think one of the keys to the Jacksonville Journey was that it had the full support of Mayor John Payton at the time, and he backed it, and so that gave the journey a little bit more emphasis than perhaps the JCCI study received. But both studies pretty much said the same thing. And from there, we went off into a number of different solutions, and collectively those solutions were working for us.
And of course, the financial crash didn't help in 2008-2009 in terms of funding some of these programs. That's been part of the problem too, hasn't it?
Yes, it has been. A problem. But here's what we found, and it was interesting to see clergy beginning to work at that time. We were working very closely with the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce. Our business leaders at that time began to travel the nation, and they realized that Jacksonville had developed this very negative reputation, so much so the corporations were reconsidering relocations to Jacksonville. And it was only at that point that the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce got involved, because they realized that there was a tremendous economic impact, a negative economic impact to this issue. I was reading, an article online, a study that was done at Iowa State University. I don't know how accurate these numbers are, but in that research, the researchers at Iowa State University suggested that when a murder is committed, by the time from the commission of the murder all the way until either the murder was execution or death in prison, the cost to society is about $17 million. That's for one murder. And I think you don't have to be a CPA or Shah Khan to realize that you need to spend a few dollars to prevent the loss of $17 million for every murder that's committed in our society. So we have to all come on board, clergy, elected officials, and the business community, and realize that this is not a black problem. This is not a Northwest Quadrant problem. This is a Jacksonville problem that, if we're not careful, can turn into a problem just like we see in Baltimore.
And we want your calls as Pastor Mark Griffin joins the show today. Faith leaders on the First Coast speaking out this week about a huge spike in violent crime. And we want to know what you think. 549-2937. McKinley in St. Augustine. Hi, McKinley. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, good morning. My question is, I just don't believe that putting a curfew on the city is good for anybody on either hand. Simply for the reason, we got to let people raise their children as they see fit. And to tell people that you take that away from the parents and stuff and says, well, your kid got to be in at 9 o'clock and stuff like that is unacceptable. Unacceptable. And I don't care whether they got the clergies and all these different things. And I look at things on TV and everything. One of the bad things is that, you know, the clergies and everything, it comes out when these things happen. What are we doing to prevent these things from happening before that? We got to work on our culture and try to get jobs for these young people, you know, just regular jobs. I mean, I'm 65 years old, and I used to have jobs cutting grass and different things, just something to put money in your pockets and stuff. That's what I believe in.
Yeah, McKinley, thanks for the call. And let's talk about the curfew. Other faith leaders have called for it in Jacksonville. In Baltimore, for the last couple of nights, a 10 p.m. curfew has been in effect to try to prevent riots that tore up the city after Freddie Gray died in police custody. Here's an email, Pastor, or rather a comment on our Facebook page, Pastor Griffin, from Abel Harding, a friend of the show. He says, the concept of a curfew is troubling. First of all, it creates a tremendous amount of work for JSO. It also treats one area of town differently than others, and it can also hurt those who may be working after school or have a legitimate reason to be out after the prescribed hour. So the curfew idea is controversial. And what about McKinley's thoughts, too, on looking at the root causes of these issues, which you've been talking about quite a bit already this morning?
Right. Exactly. And to McKinley's comment, he's right on point. And again, the recommendation number 6 of the JCCI murder study was to improve economic opportunity. So we recognize as long as 9 years ago that even if you had curfews, even if you flooded these communities with police officers, the root cause, if you don't address that root cause, then eventually things will go back to where they were. Now I agree that the curfew is a very controversial matter, and what I'm trying to get us to do as a community is to shift the conversation, because curfew is not the answer. And we've heard from our law enforcement, it would create another enforcement responsibility for police officers, which also would mean we would be increasing the number of encounters between our police officers and many of these young black men 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, which increases the likelihood that something may happen that could spur us and could put us in a situation similar to what we've seen in other cities across this nation. So I think we need to change the conversation. There's more that we have to do than to decide which side of the fence we stand on as it relates to curfew.
Rick in Riverside. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to say first that I'm against the idea of a curfew for a number of reasons, but I wanted to say also that the problem of violence is multifaceted. I don't think you can downplay the disparity in opportunity and income in creating despair. But nobody seems to want to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the gun culture and the culture of violence that I see in America. It's in popular culture, but nobody wants to talk about why these killings are always with guns. Guns are cheap. Anybody with $50 can get their hands on one, and it makes it very easy for a minor dispute to become lethal. I think the idea of a gun culture and the glorification of violence has become like a third rail of American politics. Nobody wants to talk about it. Everyone's afraid of the NRA. But there's no way that you can talk about a problem of violence without talking about the easy availability and the glorification of guns and the violence that is, you know, the only outcome of that gun. Thank you.
Rick in Riverside, thanks for the call. Pastor Griffin.
Rick, I totally agree with you. And again, you call us, you're going to hear me oftentimes refer you back to this study, because recommendation number two was of the JCCI murder study was to get illegal guns off the street. And recommendation number eight was to address the culture of violence. 9 years ago, one of the things that our alliance did, it was somewhat controversial. Everybody did not agree. But we started a gun buyback program. And the idea was not necessarily to get guns off the street that were used in commission of a crime, but to bring an awareness to the fact that we had guns in the wrong hands. And at that time, the JSO was not, you know, really on board with what we were doing. But I'm glad to see that they've come around now, as they now sponsor gun buybacks. And so
they've had several.
Yeah, exactly. During that time, we took over 800 guns off the streets, and it was so we spent over $40,000 of mostly money out of our congregation, our personal pockets. But again, it was to bring attention to the fact that we have guns in the wrong hands. And so you are exactly right that it is not one solution. It is a myriad of things that we have to do in the community, but we have to start now. And so that's why I don't want us to get so sidetracked on the issue of curfews, because there's some real issues out here, and we need to begin to address them as we did 9 years ago.
You advocate a more holistic solution, and it sounds as though you see a curfew as just a very short-term Band-Aid to what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, curfew simply puts a Band-Aid on a problem until you have time to fix it. And again, some would say, well, you know, why are you talking now? Well, we have been working for years. My focus over the last several years outside of the general public spotlight has been really focusing on the people over in Eureka Gardens apartment. And so some would notice that we've been blessed to be fairly quiet over there, but part of it has been engaging in the residents, helping them to organize themselves to understand that they have a personal responsibility for their own safety. And so we are seeing some results there that we think can be replicated in many of these other areas in Jacksonville. If we can fix Eureka, I believe we can fix any area in the city.
And, you know, Pastor Griffin, you've put your money where your mouth is in terms of helping people find jobs, creating job programs for folks that need help and need employment. You've been very active in that space.
I have a young man in my ministry that came to us, I guess it's been about 5 years ago, and he said, I heard you help people like me. And I said, what do you mean, people like you? This young man didn't have a job. He was riding around the city in the summer with his wife and three little girls in the car. We hired this young man, and I'm going to make this long story short. He has been gainfully employed from that time to now. He is now a merchant seaman. He is getting ready to start a college fund for his kids. And over these years, he's seen a lot of the guys that he used to hang with that have ended up in early graves. And so it is proof of the fact that if we touch these young men one at a time, they can turn their lives around. They are not thugs. They may be involved in thuggish activity, but I believe that you call something what you want it to become, not what it is. And so I don't subscribe to this idea that these are young men that cannot be rehabilitated. But we have to do the work, and it's going to take all of us to roll up our sleeves to get this done.
And lots of calls, emails, and tweets on what is surely a very hot topic today. Incredible amount of feedback coming into this show as we speak with Pastor Mark Griffin of the AME Ministers Alliance here in Jacksonville. Just a few tweets. Mickey, remember the Jacksonville Journey funding was gutted. Crime prevention and intervention cost tax dollars. Ben, if the goal is to make things worse, a curfew will do that. Community policing and trust needs to be built. And here's an email from Josh. These communities are struggling against premeditated economic exploitation. Referring to the Black Lives Matter protests, as well as responses to police and state violence as nonviolent or peaceful, erases the actual climate in which these movements are acting, the militant strategies that have rendered them effective, and the long history of riots and direct action on which they are built. Lots of feedback on the phone lines as well. Let's go to Susan on the South Side. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Melissa. I just want to thank people like Pastor Mark for doing what they're doing, but I want to talk about a fundamental issue, being former law enforcement myself, and I'm not Black, but I am a minority. And, you know, unfortunately, even as a non-Black minority, I have to teach my four-year-old boy, hey, when you're in trouble, I don't want you to find a policeman. I want you to find another mommy. And so, you know, that really speaks to a fundamental problem in how not all, okay, but some law enforcement, prosecutors, the mayor, and the sheriff, how they all work together to what is quote-unquote police the community. Are they policing the community as, you know, we older people understand, is protect and serve as part of the community? Or do they view the community or parts of the community as the enemy, and as such they are supplementing, you know, not only their human resources, but their police forces with actual, you know, weapons of war? And so I think that that is a fundamental issue that all four of those people need to be on board. The leadership in the law enforcement community, the prosecution community, the mayor, and that would require our communities to all come forward and vote. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Pastor Griffin, how do you foresee partnering with law enforcement on some of the initiatives that you're working on?
Well, I think it's very important. In fact, I've had a conversation with both Ken Jefferson and Mike Williams, and I've said to them, to Susan's point, which I heard her say some but not all, the challenge becomes when you have a sheriff who has a desire to foster good community policing, how do they make sure that goes all the way down to the patrol officer who's actually working in a particular neighborhood? And I think one of the strategies is that they have to determine which officers are better suited for certain areas of town. There are some officers that really, they get it, they have the ability to interact, but then there are other officers who might not just have that personality makeup. And so I think it's very important in terms of how they deploy their assets into certain communities, because there are officers, quite frankly, I did a ride-along about a month or two ago with an awesome officer, but their fears and their apprehensions that they have, particularly when you're going through some of these communities at night. And so it's a two-way street, but I think there has to be more training, there has to be more diversity and sensitivity, and quite frankly, all officers cannot work some of these challenged communities, and I think the sheriff has to make sure that they better assign those who are able to do some of this work in these areas.
Meantime, Sheriff Rutherford says his Operation Ceasefire will begin again this week as officers start knocking on doors to engage the community, calm tensions and fears, increase police presence. Your thoughts about that?
I think it's a good start. It's one of a number of things that we need to do. But what I would hope that none of us do is have an immediate knee-jerk reaction and come up with short-term solutions to what is clearly a long-term problem.
And John writes on our Facebook page, we are Selma, we are Ferguson, we are Baltimore, and yes, we are Jacksonville. Lots of calls as we discuss the faith community's public comments this week on a spike in violent crime in Jacksonville. Some have called for a curfew. We want to know what you think. 549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. Well, I agree that the jobs are an important thing. I also think that the faith of the people that is offending at this point is important, and it concerns me that the churches may be getting so closely involved with the police that they run off the potential people that they're willing and hoping to serve.
Tom, thanks. Pastor Griffin?
That really has not been a problem, because a lot of the work that I do behind the scenes is one-on-one with the people in the neighborhood, you know, outside of the police attention. And so I think we have to build trust, whether we're police officers or even if we're clergy. We have to learn how to work with these young, particularly these young black men, and help build trust with them. And so we haven't really had an issue with them as it relates to us being too close to the police officers.
And Jay's on the line all the way from Tampa. Hi, Jay. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very familiar with the JCCI study that talks about murder. And the thing that needs to be understood is that this is the violence is a byproduct of illicit economies, that in places where there aren't jobs, people are going to find their own work, and that is often the drug trade. So while there are many innocent bystanders, the majority of people are being shot and killed as it's part of the trade of the business they're involved in. While many of the things that are being discussed are great, we need more jobs in these areas so people have more choices and can get away from doing the things that where violence is part of the business. More so than anything, this is an economic problem. This isn't a moral issue. This isn't a values issue. This is an issue of people fighting for survival and doing it by any means necessary. And we as a community need to offer better means.
Thank you for the call, Jay.
Yes, Jay, I totally agree with you that the economics is real key here. What happens is, to your point, it's not about drugs. It's not about violence. It's about economics. And what we've seen so many times is it is that person who deals in drugs who is able to pay the rents and to do all the things that that are more attractive to these young people than those persons who might be working minimum wage jobs. So tied into the economics, of course, is a good education. And so they go hand in hand. Before we go to the next call, I also want to mention on Jay's point, one of my suggestions that I've made to the sheriff over the years is that when they have these confiscations where they take drugs and monies and cars and assets out of the community, that drug situation is really the micro economy for that immediate community. So when those items, those assets are confiscated, you're destroying that micro economy. And so those dollars really should be reinvested back in that community in a legal way. And we just saw in the media here a day or two ago where our sheriff's office will be receiving substantial monies from a drug forfeiture case. And so I'm very interested to see if these funds will be used in the Cleveland Arms, the Roosevelt Gardens, these areas where they are needed the most.
Sure.
It's very important.
The most economically distressed areas of town. And let me ask you as a follow-up, I think most reasonable people agree that economic empowerment is desperately needed on Jacksonville's northwest side. And there have been so many initiatives and efforts over the years. Often they seem to be siloed. There isn't a comprehensive citywide strategic overwhelming approach to lift people up economically. There have been so many efforts, though. The Newtown Success Zone comes to mind. Renew Jacks helping in certain neighborhoods. Lots of programs, lots of initiatives. But we continue to see, here we are in a county where 50% of the children in this county are on free or reduced lunch. That statistic alone should shock people. We're talking extreme poverty in certain parts of town and no economic opportunity. This is such a huge issue for this city. And when you see the news coverage coming out of Baltimore where people are rioting, the extreme poverty in that city is in part what's driving the unrest in Baltimore.
Exactly. And what we have to understand is we have to invest in these areas. Newtown Success Zone is a very good program, but yeah. It is the investment in this is not where it should be. And I can go on and on and on. So often we give lip service to these type of initiatives, but we don't give them the financial support that we give to the football stadium or efforts to do things on a major level in other areas. I think if we invest resources in these areas, they will be successful.
Jean in Fruit Cove. Hi, Jean. How are you?
Hi. I have I have a statement about what Jay said. I totally understand what your previous caller said, Jay said. However, I disagree that this is also a moral issue. And my concern is the number of kids that are able to see outright graphic murders on television, in movies, on the computer, in videos, etc. And sometimes that can be the root of the lack of morality concerning this issue. I'm not downplaying the fact that it is an economic issue as well, but I think that more needs to be said about what kids, juvenile, teenagers, young adults are able to see on the mass media. Thank you.
Jean, thank you for your call. That's Jean down in Fruit Cove. And that's obviously a concern for many folks as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she makes a very valid point in that it is not just economics. It is not just guns. It is not just education. But it is a combination of all those things. And that's why it is so critical that we all work together, because no one person or no one group can address all of these issues, but together we can.
Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. I know you've been holding a while. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes. My question is, what percentage of the sheriff or police department's budget is derived from the people they arrest? How much revenue do they generate from that? I know a two-hour stay in St. John's County's jail is the equivalent of a two-night stay, or a two-hour stay in the St. John's County jail is the equivalent of a two-night stay at the Casa Monica. So it seems like there's an awful lot of money being generated, and I'd like to know how much that actually is.
Thanks, Daryl.
I wish I was that smart, Daryl. I don't know the answer. But let me share with you, though, that I can tell you that one of the largest privately owned prison companies in the United States, Corrections Corporation of America, is a publicly traded entity. And it's been proven that the value of their stock is in direct correlation to the number of prison bed days that they have occupied. So people are making money clearly off
incarceration.
Of this. When we look at the size of our courthouse and the number of people we employ, we talk about economics. This is an economic engine for some people. Unfortunately, it is an economic engine that rides on the back of the people who can least afford to have that burden placed upon them.
And so with all of that said, where do you and your fellow clergymen go from here as you continue to speak out on this issue?
Well, what we're getting ready to do is to put meat to the bones, let's say, and really roll out our seven-point plan, which will be an ongoing plan. This is not just something we're going to do over the summer or through the end of 2015, but this is going to be a part of our long-term strategy. And what we're encouraging all of Jacksonville to do is to go back to where we were, and instead of thinking at some point we have it solved, we need to keep funding programs. Listen, in about 37 or 36 days, over 120,000 students will be getting out of the school for the summer. And I think we need to ask ourselves the question, do we have opportunities to keep these young people busy over the summer? Do we have enough summer programs out? The summer programs in areas where many of these young people can access them who don't have necessarily transportation. Do we have what's in place? If not, we could have a very hot summer in Jacksonville. And I'm not just speaking in terms of the temperature.
Pastor Mark Griffin of the AME Ministers Alliance with us this morning. Is always a pleasure. Pastor Griffin, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Much more still ahead. Later in the hour, Carrie Speckman. But up next, travel expert Judy Wells back after an absence. We'll speak with her in a moment.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration is pushing for fast-track authority for the TPP, an international trade deal, but many Democrats are opposed. Debate over giving the president fast-track authority. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Spend some time in the Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, have you thought about hopping on a barge lately? Not to go down the St. John's River, but to cruise through Europe? Travel expert Judy Wells is just back from another adventure and joins us now with some ideas for your summer getaway. Hi, Judy.
Good morning, Melissa.
And I'm so envious because once again, you're back from another fabulous vacation, this time on a luxury hotel barge cruise through the Loire Valley.
Well, it's not exactly a vacation. I was blogging all the way for every day for All Things Cruise.
Sweating and working hard.
But it is the most relaxing work vacation, as you say, I have ever had.
Amazing. So tell me all about it.
This is a barge that carries 8 passengers, crew of 5 or 6. So you are coddled and cosseted.
They just attend to your every need?
Your every need before you know you have it. Now, some you never had.
How big are your accommodations?
Quite large. Larger than any cruise ship I've ever been on. The thing is, the Renaissance, which was the ship that the barge I was on, is the largest on this particular canal. And most of the other boats hold from 8 to 12. She holds 8. There were only 4 of us on board for this first cruise of the season. Because everybody's, they don't want to do it because the weather is iffy. That's why it's a little less expensive than the others. And it's very expensive. You could drive it the distance we went in a week in a couple of hours. But you won't see it the way we saw it.
What did you see? Where all did you go?
Let's see. We went to 3 castles from the huge, huge, huge Fontainebleau to a privately owned La Boussière, where we met the Duchess grubbing in the garden.
Oh, really?
That she is trying to bring back to its 18th
century
glory.
She's a down-to-earth Duchess, then.
Oh, very down-to-earth and absolutely delightful. We strolled through 2 markets. We went to several medieval villages, a faience factory, countless churches and cathedrals, and we had a wine tasting in the Sancerre region.
So you hop off the barge pretty regularly.
You do every day, either in the morning or the afternoon, and then the rest of the time you're slowly easing down the canals, which were built in 1642. I mean, we were barely... we were speaking English, but that's about it.
Now, tell me all about the food, the drinks, everything on the barge itself.
Everything is inclusive. This is what it is. You never pull out your pocketbook unless you want to buy something.
Okay.
In a village, not on board the ship. We had superb food by an English chef who learned to cook in the French Alps from a Scottish chef, and who produced some of the finest food I've ever eaten. One night we went to a Michelin-starred restaurant, and we came back saying, we'll take Luke.
Over the Michelin five-star.
And wine was included. We had a white wine and a red wine with every lunch, a white wine and a red wine with every dinner.
This was a booze cruise, Judy Wells.
It is. It was.
Carrie Speckman and I are going to have to look into this.
Right in the middle of it, we had, as the French say, a cri de foie. The attack on the liver.
Now, these luxury hotel barge cruises have just taken off like crazy in the travel world, and you're evidence of that. Why is this becoming such a thing?
I think it's because it's a more private, more personal, intimate experience. People have gone on large cruise ships where they arrive en masse to a locale, and all they see is themselves and more like them.
Uh-huh.
This, you can charter one of these barges for a reunion or take friends. You can have a golf bar, concentrate on golf, art, wine, food. They'll tailor it for anything you want. And the prices range from a top of about $6,000 per person to down to about $1,500.
You went through France, but you can pick another country.
You can pick another country. European Waterways, who was my host, does it in, France, England, Scotland, and a number of other places, and different places within France.
Are most of the barge travelers Americans?
Most are English-speaking.
English-speaking.
Australians, Americans, Canadians, some German. Of course, French are there. They live there. They don't have to do that.
They don't need to get on the barge.
They don't need to get on the barge.
They probably think it's, do they think it's a little silly that they see these barges going down the river?
No, we did. Barges have plied this commercially since the 1600s.
That's true. That's true.
They have, what we did see were a lot of French on holiday boats. They rent them. And you can get a cabin cruiser. You can rent a barge. There are a number of companies who do this. Nichols is the one that has been recommended to me. You don't have to have a lot of boating skills. You have to have some.
But it's a lot more fun to have somebody cook every meal for you,
I'm sure. It's a lot more luxurious.
Yeah.
And it's a no-brainer trip.
So you just got back
from... go through 800 years of French history and six nights.
And you just got back. So
I just got back.
Where are you off to next?
Next month, it will be Virginia. And I go to Colonial Williamsburg, the unexpected Williamsburg, the Virginia Shore down by Assateague and Chincoteague, and into Norfolk and that area.
So it's always a fabulous adventure with Judy Wells. And if you just heard a little bit of this, you've got all of this on your website.
Well, the best place to go is All Things Cruise, where I was blogging daily and taking photographs. AllThingsCruise.com. You'll find the whole trip. Just look for Aboard Renaissance.
Judy Wells, I envy you as always. One of these days, I'm going to get to take one of these trips myself.
Oh, I hope so.
Someday far in the future. I can't wait to hear about the next one.
Okay. And I'll be here.
And we're back in a moment with Carrie Speckman.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
This Friday on Closing the Loop, George Eckenrode has done a lot of things, from playing trumpet with the OJs to database programming. But spinning on an exercise bike to save his life might be the most fun of all. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at WJCT.org/relax.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Welcome back. Well, the Derby's coming up. That's just one of the parties happening across the First Coast this weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman here today.
Yay!
Hello there.
I have a droopy mic. Whoops.
Uh-oh.
Droopy mic.
Oh, no. Well, as you fix that, you've got a full list of weekend events, including all this Derby stuff. That's one thing that I think a lot of people are excited about.
Yes, they are. Shall I start from the top, or do you want to talk about the Derby?
No, go right from the top.
Tonight, this is how out of it I am sometimes. I did not even know the draft was today.
It's today.
I kept hearing about it, but I didn't realize it was today. Anyway, the Jaguars are having a draft day party at the stadium, which is kind of cool, and it's on the field.
Oh, that is cool.
Very cool. It's at 6 to 10 tonight in the stadium.
That's
obviously
coming up tonight. Chris Bode, now, I remember this guy from when he dated Katie Couric.
I was going to just say
that's the main
thing.
Reason I remember this guy. He's in town tonight.
He made a surprise cameo appearance on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills also.
Oh, really? And yes. He's a trumpet player.
Obvious. Well, I think he's a Grammy Award winning smooth jazz trumpet player.
Thank
Melissa.
You very much. Yes.
But yeah, he's performed with Barbra Streisand, Sting, all kinds of people.
Okay, and that's tonight at the Florida Theater.
That is correct.
Continuing in their tradition of bringing in amazing artists, so kudos Florida Theater. Yes, kudos Florida Theater. Also today through Sunday, right next door here to WJCT, World of Nations.
I guess today is when they have the kids come in
from
schools, because it's crazy. I had to like almost give a secret password to get in the parking lot. The guy's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, he wouldn't let you in? Yeah, no. I had to flash my WJCT News placard to get in today, too.
Well, I don't have anything like that.
Oh, yes. We'll have to take care of that, won't we?
I just pointed and went, I'm going over there.
How could anyone not let you through? You're Carrie Speckman.
He probably looked at me in this outfit and said, what in the
who's that?
She's got an outfit for radio.
Well, he did let you in, which is very, very good.
Yes, thank you, sir. Outside.
Yes. So that's today through Sunday, Metropolitan Park. This is exciting. Great event. Lots of international food and costumes and music.
They're doing a naturalization ceremony, which is kind of cool.
That is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a reflection of how diverse this community has become. So go on out and enjoy the World of Nations this weekend. Now, also Friday, through the weekend this weekend, the Players' Championship, big weekend.
No, that's next weekend.
Excuse me. It's the tee off downtown to kick off the Players' Championship.
I thought I was
Friday.
out of the sports
I'm
world.
Losing my mind.
This is a kickoff.
It's the kickoff.
It's called tee off downtown. They had it downtown last year, but it's at Unity Plaza this year. And I'm super excited. Edwin McCain, who, by the way, has a song. It's Dr. Phil viewers voted it. I'm sure you know the song.
Sure, that was his big hit.
The best wedding song ever written.
Oh, that's sweet. And
Isn't that?
He'll be performing Friday night.
And Charlie Walker, who is a local singer-songwriter, he's performing. It's free. You just have to RSVP, go to their Facebook page, and they have food trucks and alcoholic beverages for purchase. And I happen to have two VIP tickets to give away.
Is that right?
I do.
Do we want to do this right now?
Well, you can go to my Facebook page. I was trying to make it easy.
Let's do that. Go to the Spectator's Facebook page right now.
And read what you have to do.
To get the free, what do people have to do?
Just leave a comment.
Okay.
And like my page.
And like the page, of course.
Yeah. But you get the VIP treatment. You get a private acoustic concert with Edwin McCain.
That's pretty cool.
I know.
That's pretty cool. And that's Friday night, kicking out the tee off downtown to kick off the Players' Championship.
Yep. As we were speaking of the Derby Day at the Players. Which I hear you haven't bought your hat yet.
I am actually going to this really cool event benefiting the Youth Crisis Center. I have to get my hat.
Where does one get a Derby hat?
I've been asking around. There are a few places that I guess you can pick up a cool looking Churchill Downs type hat.
Are you going to be sipping mint juleps?
I'm going to be sipping the mint juleps. I don't know if they're going to have burgoo. When I used to live in Kentucky, it's this kind of famous Kentucky dish. It's like a beef stew type thing that they serve.
The name sounds
during Derby week. Yeah. Mint juleps, of course.
And burgoo.
Yeah, burgoo. That's a big Kentucky thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
But I didn't save any of my hats from my years ago living in Lexington, Kentucky. So.
Oh, I bet you could find one. Maybe a thrift store or something.
Yeah. Email firstcoastconnected@wjct.org if you know where we can get some really good fascinators for this. That's what they call them.
The
fascinators.
Little tiny one, I know.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the royals?
Like at the royal wedding.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
I need a fascinator. To be
fascinating. You're already fascinating, Melissa. Come on.
Not as fascinating as you.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Moving on. It's the Clay Humane's Bark After Dark, which is coming up this weekend as well.
Yes, it is their main fundraiser. It's a bachelor auction. I would also like to give a shout out to three of the bachelors I know.
Okay.
Jesse Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, is he being auctioned off?
Yes. David Johnson.
He is too?
Yes. And John Lewis Meeks Jr.
Three great guys.
Yes.
All being auctioned off?
Exactly.
It's not going to be like that scene in Groundhog Day, is it? I hope not.
I don't know.
Let's hope they get some good bids. You know, let's hope that they do well.
It's Vegas themed. Dinner is included. Yeah, it's like a Rat Pack style. Kind of thing.
That's Clay Humane. That is Bark After Dark Saturday night.
Is it the Winterbourne?
The Winterbourne Inn in Orange Park.
Correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Beautiful venue. Beautiful venue. And then this weekend, Tchaikovsky's, I had no idea, Sleeping Beauty coming to town.
Yes, it is a JSO joint. And they're having some dancers from the First Coast Nutcracker will be participating.
And last but not least, the 4th annual Jewish Food Festival happening at Congregation Achavath Chesed Sunday.
I am so glad you said that, because I was just going to say what it says in parentheses, which is the temple.
Oh, that's probably safer, yeah.
It's all you. I think it's $18, all you can eat.
Yeah.
I get to judge the cake and cookies contest. Could I have a better job?
No, you could not.
I could not.
You are set up for the weekend, Speckman.
Awesome. Yes, and it's Sunday, 11:30 to 2:30. Armada plays on Saturday. Oh, and there's a little event called the Shrimp Festival. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
That's this weekend, too?
Yes.
There's so much to do.
I know.
Enjoy it, First Coast, whatever you pick. And I'll see you with my fascinator.
I can't wait to hear what kind of comment. Pass on the comments.
I will.
Okay.
And follow Carrie on Twitter at The Spectator.
Don't forget to go to Facebook if you want some VIP tickets.
That's right. Go to her Facebook page. And thanks for listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. Well, we'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.